content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, my name is Demi Arsenault from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the January 2019 issue of Lion Magazine. We'll begin today with our departments, beginning with the President's message. Service is a journey. Hello, Lions. When we became Lions, we embarked on a journey together. We all started down a path of service, sharing kindness, bringing hope to our communities, changing the lives of the people we serve, and changing our own along the way. But in many respects, the service itself is a journey. It isn't something that comes together in a single day, and it doesn't end when the event is over. It's a cycle of learning and doing and celebrating, so that we can continue evolving our work and expanding our capacity to serve. We learn of a problem. Perhaps it's an epidemic of diabetes in our hometown or a local population in need of medical care, and we begin to think in ways in which our club might help. We do some research, we reach out to people who know more about the issue, and we learn more about the needs and the obstacles in our path. This is the learning and discovering that comes before the doing, and this makes the service we do that much better, because it's more informed, more prepared, and ultimately more effective. Reporting what we do and sharing our stories is also a key component to keeping the movement going. It is one thing to perform a good deed. It's another to perform a good deed and share the story of your service with others who may champion your cause or even join you in service, all because they were inspired by your story. Remember, we're all on this journey together. We're all heading toward one goal, a better world, yet we are all taking different paths to get there. And the process of getting there is just as important as the destination. What is your path? Yours, Gudrun Ingvedotter, the International President of Lions Club International. And we have two stories today from our In the News department. The first one is titled, With Mobile App, Anyone Can Be Someone's Eyes. The world is now just a little bit more accessible to people who are blind or with low vision thanks to a simple mobile app and the collective power of more than 1.5 million volunteers. Be My Eyes is an app for mobile phones that connects blind and low vision people with sighted volunteers for visual assistance through a live video call. It was founded in 2012 by Hans-Jørgen Wilberg, a Danish furniture craftsman who is visually impaired. Wilberg learned of a friend of his who is blind and was using video calls with friends and family to help navigate everyday tasks. Wilber thought that the technology of video calling could be used to assist blind or low vision people without having to rely on family and friends. The app, launched in 2015, is available in more than 180 languages and is accessible in more than 150 countries worldwide. Volunteers simply download the app, and when a blind or low vision person needs help, the volunteer assists the user through a live video connection. The sighted volunteer may help with things like checking an expiration date, reading printed forms or medicine labels, navigating transit, or even describing places or objects. If they aren't available to help at the moment, the call is forwarded to another volunteer. With more than 1.5 million volunteers enrolled, there is always someone ready to take the call. It is my hope that by helping each other as an online community, Be My Eyes will make a big difference in the everyday lives of blind people all over the world, says Wilberg. The connection between air pollution and diabetes. Recent research published in the Lancet Planetary Health indicates a strong link between air pollution and diabetes, highlighting the importance of air quality. Researchers at Washington University School of Medicine in St. Louis, Missouri, in collaboration with the Veterans Affairs St. Louis Healthcare System in Missouri, analyzed the impact of pollution on a group of United States veterans with no previous history of diabetes. They followed the participants for 8.5 years and found that air pollution contributed to around 3.2 million cases of diabetes and the loss of 8.2 million years of healthy life. Our research shows a significant link between air pollution and diabetes globally. We found an increased risk, even at low levels of air pollution considered safe by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, or EPA, and the World Health Organization, also known as WHO, Senior Author Dr. Zayed Al-Ali told Medical News Today. This is important because many industry lobbying groups argue that current levels are too stringent and should be relaxed. Evidence shows that current levels are still not sufficiently safe and need to be tightened, he said. Medical News Today also notes that the risk of diabetes related to pollution is higher in low-income countries that lack clean air policies, such as India, China, and Indonesia, while more wealthy countries, such as Canada, Australia, and New Zealand, have a lower risk. Perhaps the most concerning is the finding that show even at levels that are officially deemed safe, the risk is still significant. Next, out of our Global Service Department, first from Australia, Droughtbusters raise funds to help the vulnerable. In Biggenden, a small town of 800 in Queensland, Australia, Lions are reaching out in support of the Biggenden Droughtbusters, taking under their wing three women who united to personally help the drought-impacted farmers. The Biggenden Lions are also a small group with a membership of 15, but together, small groups are proving they can make a big difference. Impacted themselves by the drought that continues to cause extreme hardship, the women and the Lions have been collecting money and goods for farmers in areas where the grass is gone, the hay to feed livestock is getting scarcer, and families are living with a dwindling supply of household and stock water. Because of the lack of rain, the paddocks are as hard as concrete so that if we do get a heavy downpour, it will all run off, wrote Lion Christine Holder in an email. We still have grass, although it is all dead, so we have to supplement the cattle with extra feed. Further out, it's worse. Not only are farmers losing livestock, but they're also fighting bushfires. The wildfires had already destroyed 10,000 hectares, or 24,700 acres, of grazing land when the area was hit by a tornado that dropped tennis ball-sized hail, decimating small towns and crops, says Droughtbuster Leah Treloar. The Droughtbusters formed in August when one of the women, Julie Just, was told of a young widow with three small children who needed help. The young mother, already grappling with the loss of her husband, is trying to keep a farm going and raise her children, but water is so limited that the children are bathing in the same water for 3 days at a time. The trio's first fundraiser, an all-day sausage sizzle followed by a meat tray raffle, raised more than $1,000, all of which went to farmers by way of vouchers for food and personal items to be purchased from local businesses. I couldn't believe Little Biggenden could raise this amount of money, Just says. Every little bit helps. Holder, the treasurer of the Biggenden Lions Club, says they run a weekly raffle to raise funds, but even the raffle intake has been lessened as businesses in town also suffer. People do not have extra money to spend. Evening get-togethers were also organized in the community to lift spirits, and the Droughtbusters set off to personally deliver care packages, hugs, cake, and cuppa, supporting those in need. The Lions, with Australian government federal funding, have supported their community since 1995 through the Lions Community Care Service. Unfortunately, there is no quick fix on this, so we are in it for the long haul, says Treloar. The Biggenden Lions Club is very active in this town and are very supportive of anyone doing something positive in the community. And also from our Global Service Department from the United States, we have Guides Make Fitness No Sweat for Visually Impaired. Georgia fitness instructor Dawn Wells was asked to lead an exercise class for the blind and visually impaired in 2014. This was new to Sista Fitness, as she's called, as the ever-energetic woman is known in the business. And frankly, she says, it was a disaster. But Wells didn't just put the experience behind her. She chose to learn from it and move forward. Now, with the assistance of Georgia Lyons, she is helping to get the blind healthy through her nonprofit Angel Eyes Fitness and Nutrition Program. She followed her first experience with a six-week fitness program for the Georgia Libraries of Accessible Statewide Services, and her students weren't the only ones learning something new. Wells discovered two things in particular. This special audience would require a special approach because the visual cues used in a fitness class wouldn't work. And there's a dire need for fitness and nutrition education within the blind community. In her regular classes she teaches at Dawn Wells Fitness in the Atlanta area, Wells informed some of her regulars about her mission to help the visually impaired, and they in turn told her about Lyons. They formed the Oak Hill Lyons Branch Club out of the Conyers, Georgia Lyons, and Wells, a veteran of the U.S. Marine Corps, became a Lyon. Now Lyons from the Conyers Club and the Oak Hill Branch Club are volunteer guides in her classes for the visually impaired, and Wells says the success is not about her. It's all of us, she says. It's about the participants and the Lyons. Cecily Nipper of Atlanta is a fan. Nipper, 31 years old, became legally blind in 2012 from glaucoma and experienced a stroke that blinded her in 2017. Her physical therapist is thrilled with the mobility she has recovered, she says, and she's loving her chance to get out and meet people who are struggling with some of the same issues. She's the best, she says of her instructor. It's contagious, that energy she has. She explains it in a way that I don't feel disadvantaged because I can't see. Nancy Morton Linick, a Conyers Lyon and advisor to the Oak Hill branch, is one of the guides helping Nipper and the others. Her involvement in Wells' work has rejuvenated her, making her a more active Lyon, she says. Guides like Morton Linick assist students with proper positioning, doing the movements correctly, and offering a hand to balance when need be. As a bonus, many become friends. Dawn's addressing the global causes of vision and diabetes, says Morton Linick. She isn't just helping people exercise. She's helping them fight diabetes. Oak Hill Lyons' Jeff Cole Glazer and his wife, Marty, are also enthusiastic volunteers. Before, many of these people were limited to exercising in chairs because it wasn't safe. But now we can lead them in their direction and it helps them be more active, he says. My wife and I have been blessed with good health and we're both retired. This is our opportunity to give back. It feels good to help people who are trying to help themselves. And Dawn is passionate about what she does. She has a very exciting personality. You can feel it, and that's her all the time. It's becoming like family. In her latest approach, Wells has added Zoom, a video conferencing tool, so she can teach remotely with the assistance of Lyons who are on-site with the students. It allows her to reach more people at more locations that are closer to their homes. It is extremely rewarding for me, she says. It fills my heart and makes me appreciate all I can do. And next, I'm going to read one of our feature articles for this month. It's titled, Cakes for Kids, by Kids. It was just 2 years ago that the Metairie Airline Lions Club in Louisiana was pulling together their first ever Cubs program to add some life and able bodies to their service activities. In that short time, they've established a robust partnership with a local nonprofit to help give joy to children in foster care. The 8 to 10 members of the club's Cub program bake and decorate cakes for children who are having birthdays while living in foster care. My daughter really wanted to do something that would help other kids, says Sandy Arce, who joined the Metairie Club because of the Cub program. She wanted to give her kids an opportunity to serve, and she realized it wasn't easy to get projects started without the backing of a global organization like Lyons. Honestly, we just never knew how to implement any of that, she says, when talking about their efforts to volunteer before joining the Lyons. After brainstorming meeting with the Cubs, Arcee went to the local nonprofit CASA Jefferson Parish, which supplies court-appointed special advocates to children in foster care, to see if there was a way they could help the kids in the system. Executive Director for CASA, Rosanna Gonzalez, had just the idea. A lot of kids who come into custody say, "I've never had a birthday cake in my life," says Gonzalez. "They've never blown out the candles." Arcee speculates her own experience may be partially what made her so dedicated to the project. "I never had birthdays much as a kid," she says. "For whatever reason, financially, we weren't able to do it. I felt a little robbed. It means a lot to me that I can provide this to these kids." At the beginning of each month, Gonzalez gives Arcee a list of children in foster care with birthdays coming up. She lists the days that the cakes are needed, along with a description of what the recipient likes, like Spider-Man, flowers, or dragons, and the age, gender, and first name of the child, omitting any identifying details. "Confidentiality for the children in the foster care system is very important," says Gonzalez. "Only specially trained people are allowed to know who these kids are." The Cubs divvy up the cakes due that month and get to work. Arcee's daughters get really into it, she says. They look up inspiration on Pinterest and watch videos on how to bake cakes. Arcee admits it wasn't easy at first. "We had 20 cakes the first month," she says. "It was like a crash course in how to bake a cake." CASA helps provide materials like cake mixes and icing. Some people use the mixes, others make theirs from scratch. "Some go all out," says Arcee, "but we invite everyone to participate, no matter the skill level." She recalls one grandmother who called Sandy distressed over the rainbow cake request she had gotten. She wanted to know if rainbow sprinkles from a can were good enough. Arcee reassured her that it wasn't about how beautiful the cake was. "It isn't about your aptitude," she says. "It's about what your heart tells you to do." Gonzalez says the foster kids love the cakes and look forward to them. "Just the idea that someone is making a cake just for them, and it will be what they like and what they want. They get so excited," she says. Unlike other service projects where Lions see the joy in the recipient's face, like when they get to a new pair of glasses and can see for the first time, or when they receive a warm meal for the holidays, the kids baking cakes never get to have that moment. Because the identities of the children in foster care are kept confidential, the Cubs and Lions never get to meet them or even see a picture of them enjoying their cake. "Sometimes I can send a photo if it's maybe a toddler, and I can get a picture of her hand smashing the cake or something like that. But no faces," says Gonzalez. Arcee says she's surprised and impressed by the Cubs' willingness to put so much effort and love into something when they don't even get to the reward of seeing how happy it makes another child. "They are doing it from the bottom of their heart. They truly have hearts of gold," she says. "The first cake we did was a spackle job. It leaned to one side. It was very heavy, but it was so much fun to make," says Sandy. Another quote from the article is, "Once we got a smash cake for a one-year-old, they had made two cakes, one for the family and one for the baby. My heart melted." And that was from Rosanna Gonzalez, the CASA Executive Director. From our Spotlight Department, Carving His Own Path as a Lion. And this is about Ran Emerson in the Salt Spring Islands Lions Club of British Columbia, Canada. It was 1983, and Ran Emerson was chatting with some folks who were planning to build a kindling shed. They needed a cement mixer. He had one. Turns out those folks were Lions. Emerson has been a Salt Spring Lion ever since. He's not your typical lion, though. Emerson began making carvings from pieces of wood he'd pluck off bushes when he was a small boy on walks with his father in Northumberland, England. Now, 86 years old, Ran spends his days in his home on a hillside in the woods of Salt Spring Island, British Columbia, creating handmade Christmas figures. Carved from 2x2 cedar deck rails, Emerson makes Santas, gnomes, elves, bishops, singing monks, merlins, kings, carved trees, lamp posts, and anything else that might fit into a Christmas landscape. After his wife passed away in 2013, nurses started coming to his house regularly, and he began to give them figures to take home with them and to share with the people at the hospital. He's continued giving carvings away every year since. This year, everyone got a Santa. A trained hairstylist and amateur painter, Emerson came to Canada in 1955, where he opened a series of hair salons in Edmonton. He sold his paintings in the salons, but he refuses to sell his carvings. He gives his carvings away to put a smile on someone's face, says Zone Chair Pat Spencer. That's all he wants. Though he's been a Lion for 35 years, he's been unable to attend a meeting for the past 20 or so, first due to his wife's health and now due to his own. But he serves in his own way, says Spencer. The club organizes a Christmas dinner for seniors, and Emerson took all the phone calls, she says. And, of course, they use his carvings to decorate the tables at the dinner. I'm a little bit different than the rest of the guys, says Emerson. I'm a Salt Spring Lion. I'll do anything for this island. The Salt Spring Club has had a big impact on their small island. In 1967, Lions built 22 units of low-cost housing for seniors, put a park in the sports field, and up until the 70s operated ambulance services on the island. The Lions were the paramedics, says Spencer. Today, an active club with 53 members, they still maintain the senior housing, and they've recently funded a skate park. We just finished opening a bike park for small kids, with hills and corners and all that, says Spencer. They've also begun doing vision screenings for the elementary school kids. And while he can't partake in all the activities, Emerson will keep providing the island with the joy in the shape of his wood carvings. Don't ask him if he has a favorite, though. They're all my children, he says. Next, we have an article from LCIF Impact titled, A Community Center Flourishes Thanks to Leos and LCIF. On the coast of Uruguay lies its capital city, Montevideo. In this vibrant city is the Leo Club Montevideo Ancina, one of the first Leo clubs awarded a grant from Lions Clubs International Foundation, or LCIF. Recognizing a need for renovations at a local community center, the Leos applied for an LCIF Leo Service Grant and were awarded $5,000. Abandoned 10 years ago, the community center was in rough shape. The inside of the building had deteriorating paint, damaged walls, and dirty floors. Most importantly, it needed a new roof. Outside, the weeds and bushes were overgrown, and trash littered the lawn. 80 Leos from the Leo Club Montevideo Ancina, along with 15 Lions from Montevideo Ancina and Madame Curie Lions Clubs, funded by the Fundación Leones del Uruguay, worked hard to give the community center a much-needed update. A handful of volunteers from the community center also supported the effort. The volunteers worked together to repaint the interior and exterior walls, doors, windows, outdoor play equipment, and the building's sign. They also spruced up the outdoor areas. Volunteers cleaned the patio, the lawn, and tended to the bushes. In addition, professionals were hired to replace the roof, and over the next few months, further renovations were made to the building, including a new bathroom, new furniture, a new kitchen, lighting, and air conditioning. The new and improved community center is directly benefiting 100 children and will benefit the neighborhood by providing recreational and educational activities. The center will offer computer classes, a library, and community festivals. It will also house a program that serves meals to children who do not get enough to eat and will establish an early childhood care center managed by the government's national care system. The desire to end hunger and help the city's youth is what motivated the Leos to develop this project. In fact, the Leos visit the center every Saturday to give snacks and play games with the neighborhood children. The Leos plan to keep generating new activities to serve the community. One idea is to start a garden. Thanks to the big-hearted Leos and Lions of Montevideo, along with LCIF, the community will have a new early childhood care center and will flourish with the new space for positive neighborhood development. Leo Service Grants are a brand new program offered by LCIF. The grants empower Leos to make a bigger impact within their own service projects while being exposed to leadership skills. LCIF will award up to $2,500 for Leo clubs in Alliance District or up to $5,000 for Leo clubs in Alliance Multiple District. And you can visit lcif.org/BE100 to learn how Campaign 100 will serve youth and work toward a world where no one goes hungry through sponsoring programs addressing the distinct needs of at-risk and vulnerable populations and expanding resources and infrastructure needed to address food shortages in our communities and around the world. And we're going to wrap up today with my favorite club news. Beginning with the Willimantic Lions, who made donuts again at the 2018 Hebron Harvest Fair, a project of the Hebron Lions Clubs in Connecticut. Fairgoers ate or took home more than 8,000 donuts and drank enough coffee to generate more than $6,000 that Lions will donate to local charities. Work to rehabilitate Three Senses Trail, often called Braille Trail, at Calaveras Big Tree State Park in California is underway. The project is a partnership between California State Parks, the Arnold Lions Club in California, and the Calaveras Big Trees Association. In Illinois, the Durand Lions rededicated their newly renovated Lions Water Fountain that was purchased in 1986 as a gift to the village. In Ohio, the Miller Sport Lions are especially proud of Lion Roy Brewer, who constructed three large double-sided information kiosks for Lions Park. Brewer spent hundreds of hours designing and building the all-weather structures in time to post maps for visitors attending the town's annual Sweet Corn Festival. Dr. Tom Woods and his fellow members of the University Heights Lions Clubs in Arkansas conducted numerous free eye screenings for children in the northeast part of their state over the summer. Ashtabula Lions in Ohio celebrated their member Ed Searles, who was recently honored with the Melvin Jones Fellowship Award. And finally, the DuPont Lions in Washington are known as Eager Builders after taking on many construction projects in their community. DuPont Lions completed the demolition and reconstruction of the major arbor in the town's Clock Tower Park and built permanent restrooms in the park just in time for summer festivities. And, of course, if you'd like more information on these or any of the other stories that are out there on Lions right now, you can check them out at www.lionsclubs.org. And unfortunately, we've run out of time for today's episode of Lion Magazine. Please be sure to tune in next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I am Demi Arsenault for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a blind and print-impaired audience. The broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, triangleReadingService.org. So long until next time. If you have any questions or comments, please call us at 919-832-5138.